this fly exists and is present in the environment, right, in a given location. But for the fly to deposit the eggs, they need to find a womb, so they need to be attracted with a, to the blood there, and they go to deposit the eggs, and then the larva hatch, and burrows in the tissue start creating this huge lesion that that is very characteristic.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/ag. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. Don't hire another VA stuck in 2015. Hire a remote AI specialist from Latin who runs AI tools, works in your time zone, and helps your team move faster. Schedule your free strategy call at www.wisevas.io. Zentrix Insights. The right person in the right seat starts with knowing how your team is actually wired. Visit ZentrixInsights.com. Zentrix OS, the business operating system built for teams who are serious about goals, tasks, and measurable results. One platform to run your entire operation. Revenue grew, so did your hours. The owner's box, buy back 20 a week. Stop hiring for problems automation can solve. Start with Elevate Agents.
Hello, and welcome to the Feed Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm your host, Bob Odker. Today, I have Frederico with me, and we're going to talk about screw worms, and a very hot topic at the moment. And Frederico, if you did introduce yourself, I'd appreciate it.
Thanks again for the invitation. I think this is the second time we've seen in this podcast. It's always a pleasure. So I'm currently working as a postdoc in South Dakota State University, but I came to the U.S. in 2018 to do my master's and stay and did my PhD at University of Florida. But originally I'm from Argentina, where I graduated from a veterinary school in Universidad del Litoral in Santa Fe. And yes, it's been a long road. So I'm happy to be here today enjoying this conversation. And I hope I can tell you a bit about my experience with this new problem for the U.S., but very common in Argentina.
Yeah, well, and first I'll say welcome back. Good to have you back. And yeah, I'm very interested in this topic. So we could just get started. My first question to you would be, you know, how many cases of screw worm have you seen?
So, yeah, in my lifetime, as I mentioned, I grew up in Argentina. I lived there until the age of 28, 27, I think. And I've seen hundreds of cases. I don't know the exact number. My family owns a beef cow calf operation. So I've seen them there. Also, my dad is a large animal veterinarian. So I am, and we used to treat many cases. So it's something I'm familiar, and most of people, most of ranchers, producers in Latin America, I would say South America, because it was controlled in Central America. It was under control until a few years. But most people in South America have seen it, and they've treated, and they know what it's like. Yeah, it's a problem, but I think there is hope it can be controlled. And particularly for the feedlot, that I think a lot of people involved in the feeding industry will be listening to this podcast, and it's a material that is relevant for them. I think they have to be concerned, but it's also something they can control.
Still delegating work to someone who hasn't adapted to AI? You don't need another assistant stuck in 2015. You need a remote AI specialist who can handle inboxes, research, reporting, ops, admin, sales support, and marketing using tools like ChatGPT, Claude, OpenClaw, and automations. Wise VAs connects you with AI-trained Latin talent in your time zone at up to 80% less than a U.S. AI hire. Schedule your free strategy call at www.wisevas.io.
Just a question that pops to my mind. If the screw worm occurs in all types of animals, correct?
Well, it happens in animals, warm blood animals, right? And it's more common in livestock, ungulated livestock, right? So cattle, sheep, goats is more common. Potentially, it could happen in anything. It could happen in, deer get it. And even sometimes in Argentina, I've seen it that I heard about cases where people are like homeless people living in the streets and in a very, in a terrible manner, let's say, they can even get it. But it's often a situation where it's extreme because this fly exists and is present in the environment, right, in a given location. But for the fly to deposit the eggs, they need to find a womb, so they need to be attracted to the blood there, and they go to deposit the eggs, and then the larva hatch, and it burrows in the tissue, start creating this huge lesion that is very characteristic. So I've seen a lot of people talking about their pets, and the reality is I've had pets all my life back home, and none of my pets ever got screwworm. And most of people don't get their pets with screwworm. And the reason is because if your dog gets injured and you're going to see it back home, you're going to clean the wound, right? And you're going to cover it. So it's more an issue that it happens when an animal is, a pet is neglected and is not taken care of. But it could still happen. Now, the problem why we see more commonly in livestock is because you are not going to pet them, right? Or you're not gonna be seeing them every single day. The larva has they stay in the tissue of the animal, in the flesh, the small larvae for about a week. So after the eggs hatch. So if an animal gets a wound, I think mostly it's more commonly in cow-calf operations. If it gets a wound and the cows go to the pasture and you don't see them the next day, the next 2-3 days, by the time you see them, the larva had time to grow, right? That's why I think in part it's way more common in livestock than other animals. But it could happen in many species, yes.
Okay, well, Faye, with that in mind, you know, let's say I've got a few cows and I'm out walking, looking them over, and I mean, obviously I see a wound, but what kind of signs would make me think that I've got a screw worm problem? What would I be looking for?
Yeah, there's a, first of all, the I tell you what we do back home, right? And the management in cow-calf operations, most of the cases, the people that take care of them, they would either pen the cattle or at least round them with their horses once a week, especially during the warm time. They will at least go and check them. And when you go nearby an animal with a screw worm, you will smell it.
Smell it?
Even before you see it. Yes, the smell is very distinctive. It's very characteristic. Once you smell one, you remember. It's different than a normal infection. The smell somewhat resembles to foot rot, but it's very particular, and you will not forget it, let me tell you. The other thing is you're going to see a big wound because it can start with a small scratch that the animal had from a barbed wire or some surface they got a cut, But once the larvae start eating the tissue and the flesh, they go inside, it can become as big as a grapefruit, the cavity they make, or even more, right? So now you have a big cavity there that is also swollen from the outside. You have a hole on the skin of the animal, and it's of course there's some liquid coming out, some secretions, and it's very smelly. Now, for the animal to present a different behavior, I mean, it needs to be advanced, right? The animal needs to be really affected. In the early stages, he's going to stay with the herd. It's not going to change much. But yes, basically, you will see your animal with a wound. It's stinky. It's gross. It's growing. And then you see the worms. If you bring it close and you look inside the wound and that cavity that forms, you will see the screws. They're not small. They're maggots. And what, half inch? Depends on the stage, right? But they're not small. You can easily see them.
Okay, so this is something unusual. We're gonna be walking around our cattle, and we're gonna go, boy, I haven't seen that before, right?
Yeah, you will. I think it's not going to be hard to diagnose. And here is the for people working in feedlots and feeders. I think they have an advantage in the feedlots that they already have pen riders checking their cattle for other stuff, right? For BRD, so bovine respiratory disease, or bloat, or acidosis, or, you know, crippled animals. So they already have the pen riders working their cattle, going through their pens. So if the screwworm expands, which hopefully won't, but it's already in Texas and New Mexico, and if it ever reaches the area with the feed yards in the panhandle, I think they still have the big advantage of having these people that are checking their cattle, and for sure they will notice it. I mean, it's going to be very hard that they'll miss it. And if you notice, like I told you, I've seen hundreds and hundreds of cases. The treatments are effective. The treatment work is more about, okay, do you get it on time, or do you get it when it's extremely advanced and the animal is suffering? But if you get it in early stages, the recovery is successful, the animal heals, is not you're not gonna lose the animal, to be said. I think my biggest fear is in the cow-calf sector, because sometimes the cows are in these big rangelands, hundreds of acres, and they don't get to be seen very often, very frequently.
Okay.
That is a problem, because the animal can fully develop this parasite can fully grow in the animal before they even get seen or again, right? And that could mean you could lose some cattle. Now, let me tell you, some management that we do back home to minimize the incidence of this problem. So I would say the number one ally that you have is the cold. So this fly does not like the cold and doesn't really do much, and it's not very present when in the winter months. That is also a benefit for the Midwest, and I'm here in South Dakota. I doubt it could get up to here in most of the year, right? Now we have nice weather, but it doesn't last that long. So the cold is one. So what we do is we try to match our management in any beef operation to match the winter months. So our calving happens in the winter. We try to make it in the winter. If we need to castrate calves in the winter, right? We try to avoid the months when they're going to be high fly activity. So we try to avoid any calving near the summer or any castration. And this could be something that we'll have to maybe feeders may need to adapt. So a lot of times they purchase calves from sale barn and they came as bulls, right? They haven't been castrated. They're few, I mean, but they're there. And they need to castrate them in the feeder. Or sometimes the stalker operations, they purchase what is called a high-risk calf, has never seen a vaccine, non-castrated, anything. Well, I would say they either had to wait a bit, or there are other methods like the illustration, the rubber bands. Perhaps that could help to minimize. I used to use a rubber band back in Argentina, but mainly in dairy calves. So first days of age, you use a rubber band, and because you don't have a wound, you have less risk. It could still happen once the testicles drop and you have that tiny little live scar there. You could still get screwworm if it secretes something, but it's less of course, it's way less than if you make an open wound with a knife and cut the testicles in the normal way is done, right? The second thing that we do is prevention. Once you have a wound, either castration or any type of wound, we use products immediately in the wound to prevent. And I check in the FDA website, and there are already some approved. And this is something every producer needs to talk with their veterinarian, the people responsible for health in their area of animals. But basically, there are ointments and sprays that can be applied directly in the wound that they contain insecticide. And they are effective. They help. They do. They really help. So you do this preventively. I'm not sure if they are recommending now the use of an injectable for prevention, like an endectocide, but we do that together. So we do combine. Let's say we are going to castrate calves. We castrate them and we apply an ointment in the wound and an injectable parenteral to have them with that drug systemically for some days until the wound heals. And with that, you minimize greatly the incidence. So it's something that you learn and to live with, and it's okay. People in Argentina, as you know, we have more cattle than people. And unfortunately, screwworm is endemic. There's no been efforts to control it. It's everywhere and people still produce. So you can survive it. I don't think it's the end of the world. It just takes more labor in some point.
Every person on your team is wired differently. Some thrive with structure. Others drive results through autonomy. Some process information fast and move on. Others need depth before they decide. And when the wrong person is in the wrong seat, not because of skill, but because of how someone is built, performance suffers and no one knows why. Zentrix Insights maps exactly that. Behavioral patterns, cognitive style, and natural work preferences are all visible in 15 minutes. So you stop guessing who should own what and start putting the right people in the right seats. Because the best teams are not just talented, they are well-placed. Visit ZentrixInsights.com.
So then after you kill the screwworm, then you still have to manage or doctor the wound for a period of time, I presume?
Yeah, so depends on the how big the wound is, and cattle is very resistant. If it's small, let's say you're in a cow-calf herd, right, and the cattle is in open range, and people will do the treatment in the range. They're gonna rope and get the animal and just treat it there, right? If it's a small wound, probably the next time you see it's already healing. You can go and put more ointment if you want, or spray again, but that's fine. Now, if it's a big, large cavity, you might require to clean it, and that will depend. But regarding of treatment, it's very important that people talk to the veterinarian what they recommend, how to do it, and And of course, inform. If they ever have a case, they need to inform the authorities. Right now, it's very important so that this stays under control and they don't go and do things by themselves. My intention here is just to tell you how we do to prevent and manage, and so that people know that there is a chance that they can have it under control in the case this becomes a pest that stays for some time all around, right? Right now, I think there's only 6 cases in the US. Hopefully, it's not going to grow that much, but the chances are, and especially because the summer is coming. I mean, we haven't even started the summer, right? So we have all the summer up front. That means the fly is going to be active. But yes, the treatment of the wound depends on how big and how severe it is. Many times we also need to apply antibiotics if it's really big. And yeah, that's one of the problems. And especially, I think the ones that suffer the most are going to be newborn calves or recently castrated calves. I spoke with a friend because I left from some years, and I thought, okay, is there something new? So I called my friend who managed a large feed yard in Argentina, 22,000 head. Like I asked him, are you really seeing many cases? And told me, unless we do something, unless we castrate, unless we dehorn, unless we... It's very infrequent, right? If the animal stay healthy and doesn't get any type of wound, even with the fly everywhere, you don't have a problem, right? The problem is, but okay, if they decide that they receive a group of calves and they decide to go and castrate them and they don't apply the preventive, you can expect 100% prevalence, right? All of them, you get it. If you don't put the preventive treatment on them. So that's kind of the reality of this issue.
I think I was just thinking as you were talking that this seems to be preventative maintenance or management is really the key to controlling it. Is just don't create a home for the fly and the larva, and that's your best plan of attack. Is that right?
Yeah, that's your best shot once the larva is present. I think to eradicate it is something that the U.S. did. And let me tell you, we used to study this in vet school back in Argentina as a success case and something incredible, right? That the U.S. did. So you already did it once, and I'm sure you're going to do it again because you already have the technology and you know how to do it. The U.S. know, the USDA did it, they will do it again, no doubt. But yes, what... For the meantime, when it's present in an area, I think the prevention is key. Prevention to not let that fly deposit the, or even if the fly deposits the eggs will not grow with an insecticide in the wound, right?
It's time for our famous three.
Most teams don't have a strategy problem. They have a systems problem. Tasks scattered across tools, goals buried in spreadsheets, and metrics no one actually checks. Zentrix OS fixes that. It's a true business operating system that brings tasks, goals, and performance metrics into one connected workspace. So your team always knows what to do, why it matters, and how they're tracking. No more juggling apps. No more missed accountability. Just a clear, organized way to run your business the way it was meant to be run. If you're ready to stop managing chaos and start managing with clarity, Zentrix OS is built for you. Visit ZentrixOS.com and take control of how your team operates.
Okay. Well, listen, we've talked quite a bit about cow-calf and on the range and that kind of stuff. We mentioned feedlots. What is, you know, sort of the indirect and direct impacts of screwworms in a feedlot where we're trying to finish cattle?
Yes, like I mentioned, I think the direct impact could be if they have cases that they need to treat. But because they already have the pen riders, the treatment is relatively simple. If they need to do a procedure like castration, they can use preventive measures. So the direct impact may not be so big in their operation, I think, unless they all the for some reason all the animals get wounds, which is not common, absolutely not common in a feeder. Indirectly, my fear is what's going to happen with the cow-calf side and the provision of calves. And we already seen it this last year when they need to close the border with Mexico and 1.2 million head of cattle stop coming. So that is my biggest concern. And I don't know. And I don't know who can tell, but yeah, that's the side of the equation that could affect more the feeders. What is going to happen with all the calves coming to the feedlots? What if this spreads and how is this going to affect? How is it going to affect the willingness of the cow calf producers to treat their calves? Because it's going to increase the labor, right? Having to do all that. I don't know. I think that we will see changes also in the probably if this stays, people that has like fall calving in the sometimes fall calving in October. If you are somewhere in the south, it's still pretty warm, right?
Right.
So that may have to change towards more colder months. So that could also change a bit, or maybe just privilege spring calving in early January, for example. So yes, indirectly, I think the biggest changes for the feeder will come from the indirect effects, as they already did with the provision of calves.
Perhaps some podcasts like this and stuff and some understanding on what screwworm is. I've learned a lot here that, you know, they're not going to tell you on the news or you're not going to see on the internet with people wanting to kind of use this as a news story. I mean, maybe we need to be just a little more calm and understand what screwworm is and the ways to manage it and, you know, be professional and work through this rather than having some kind of hysterical reaction in the market for trade and that type of thing.
Yeah, I think it is a concern, and people is right to be concerned, but it can be managed and it can be eradicated as the United States already did once. So I think yes, it is important to stay professional, communicate with the authorities, either your veterinarian, the USDA inspectors, anyone related, and just follow the recommendations, and for sure it will be something that will pass. I'm pretty sure that in the next hopefully in the next years this will be completely gone once they established successfully the sterile fly program at full speed and all the locations they're talking about. I hope it will be gone again. And I think, yeah, people just need to stay calm and follow recommendations as the authorities are saying. It'll be fine.
Okay. Well, Frederico, we've covered a lot of ground here. Is there anything that I haven't asked or that you haven't said that you think we need to get out here to people watching?
No. I think we are good. It's always a pleasure to be in this podcast, and yeah, I hope to see you again sometime. And
then I'll just say to the people watching, I hope you found this very interesting. I always like to talk about these topics with people who have actual hand-on experience that can tell you, you know, what it's like, and it can be very informative. And if you found it that way, I'd ask that you would share this with others, tell them about it. Appreciate if you'd subscribe and keep an eye on what's going on here. So with that in mind, I'd say God bless you and have a good life. And Frederico, I hope to see you again in the future on another podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. It was a pleasure.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent with APA Time Zone Hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.